Leeds, the city where the mousetrap was invented, Cluedo was created, and where M&S first set up shop, was the destination for EG's latest Question Time debate. The city has hit national headlines recently, for better and for worse. It was announced in April, with great fanfare, that broadcasting giant Channel 4 has picked Leeds as the destination for its new HQ. The effect this will have on attracting new creative talent into the city was unsurprisingly a big talking point, and the challenges the property industry need to address in providing suitable space for an expected wave of new occupiers was also discussed. However, Neville Street, near Leeds train station, was reported in February this year as the most polluted street outside of London by environmental group Friends of the Earth. As a result, transport and the environmental agenda also dominated discussion.
So there's much to discuss tonight, including how residents like occupiers are being drawn to the centre of the city, which is visibly changing for the better. Much like EG, there's a segue. At this event last year, we just launched Radius Data Exchange, our powerful new data sharing platform. I'm pleased to say that that's gone from strength to strength over the last 12 months, and the agency market is now working together to powerful effect sharing data so that it's more accurate, more comprehensive, and more timely, and colleagues can tell you more about that after the event. I'll introduce our panel in a moment, once they're all sorted. But just a quick reminder of how the format tonight will work. Many of you have pre-submitted questions. Thank you for those. I'll come to some of you during the course of the evening, and I hope you're poised. If you do want to ask a question, make a comment, disagree with the panel, with me, stick up your hand and a microphone will come and find you very quickly, and do wave if I don't see you immediately. And if you can't face asking a question in the old-fashioned way, get your phones out now and go to Slido, slido.com. Details will be up on the screen in a moment, and use the hashtag EGQT. You can also like questions to the top to ensure that the ones you want to get asked do get asked and answered. And if you're tweeting, please use the hashtag EGQT as well. Right, I think we're ready for the panel. I think we're all ready. Closest to me is Rick de Blaby, Executive Chairman of Get Living. Next to him is Mark Finch, Director of Real Estate at Rushbond PLC. In the centre, we have Matthew Jones, Director of Residential Development Management at Savills. Then Dr. Caroline Mullen is from the Institute for Transport Studies at the University of Leeds. And Eve Rudehouse is Chief Officer for Economic Development at Leeds City Council. I think we'll start with a question from me, actually, for a change. Rick and Mark, you're sat next to each other for alphabetical reasons, but I think that's symbolic as well. You're both bringing buildings to the city, bringing occupiers to the city as well, bringing residents to the city. And in the last few weeks, those discussions have moved on fairly significantly. Rick, you most recently of all, I read it in EG, your project just down the road is progressing nicely. Do you want to explain where you're at?
Sure. Well, we made a planning application this week for 783 new homes, built-to-rent homes, down on the Globe Road site at the bottom of Whitehall Road, just by the canal, in eight different buildings. Tallest tower is about 23 stories. There's two towers and then a series of mid-sized buildings and a few low-rise buildings. Look, we're really excited about this, and there's not the same level of supply of built-to-rent homes that you see in places like Manchester. And the economic story that's going on in here in terms of new employment coming through, in terms of HMRC, what you're doing, Mark, with Channel 4, the whole tech sector, Reed Smith, a whole load of other employers coming in. I mean, they're employing people who increasingly want to live in the city, and it's a very vibrant city. A lot more people, as you will have seen, are choosing to rent instead of buy. That's not just for affordability reasons. It's a positive choice. There's a really exciting change going on in our world in terms of the product. There's a lot more technology in the things that we're developing these days that actually I think are absent in a lot of homes for sale. So the application's gone in. If we can get a consent or resolution to grant sometime in the autumn and a pretty quick Section 106 agreement, we'd really like to be on site early next year. And actually, I mean, we're slightly behind where we want it to be, because with 3,000-4,000 people coming into the HMRC, you know, they're exactly the sort of profile of people that we're looking to accommodate. I mean, there's a misconception quite a lot of the time that we just house, you know, young, rich professionals. That's absolutely not the case. If I look at East Village in Stratford at the Olympic Park, the average salary of the of our residents is bang on the London average salary. The largest employer of our residents is the NHS. We have a lot of police, we have a lot of teachers. It's not for the high end. I mean, we really pitch Get Living at absolutely that mid-market. And the rental levels that we can look and the ones that we forecast are absolutely pegged to the sort of mean average salaries that you get in the city centre of Leeds. That's how we calculate it. So, yeah, very excited, Damon, about what we're bringing through.
OK, Eve's listening intently there. I'll bring her in a moment about whether your hopes will be realised for speedy conclusion there. But just briefly, why Leeds? Why South Bank particularly? And how easy is it to do business here to compare to some other cities you're active in?
I have the benefit of knowing Leeds pretty well, because I was involved in another project called Wellington Place, which is on the other side of the road. So when we were first looking at buying this site, coming in to meet Tom Reardon and Martin Farringdon and talking to people like Roger Marsh at the LEP and a whole load of your colleagues, Eve, it was a great start. I've always found the council really open for business and very willing to help. So it wasn't a difficult decision about why Leeds, because as I say, you can see the economic story happening. And I'd say the Leeds proposition compared to the one even, 5 years ago is transformed from where it was. So that wasn't a hard one. The real challenge in our world, I've got to tell you, is the viability challenge, because you know, you're into quite thin margin stuff. We're in low single-digit yield territory, and we spend more money on the building than most housing developers would. And yet the level of value that we can create, as I say, is pegged to mean average salaries. There's a big thing in our world about what the gross to net leakage is on the income. And I think the sector's mispricing a lot of that, which could be interesting because there could be some sort of consolidation moments to come. So the challenge is always the viability. And of course, planning authorities want the best quality architecture, because our site has no back. It's the first thing you see when you come in on the train. There's a whole load of environmental requirements that people want. There's the affordable housing requirements. I mean, you do get loaded with a lot of stuff. And I'm not saying we're resistant to any of that, because we want to make it a magic place. And we want to really open it up to the canal as well, so that it's not just a gated community, but it really opens up to that whole area and really opens up the whole domain and the whole resident experience. So Leeds was never the challenge on that. It's always the viability one.
Okay, thank you. And Mark, you're at a slightly more delicate stage of negotiation, perhaps, but can you give us a quick update on Channel 4? They're definitely coming to the city. They might be coming to
you. We're investing very heavily in the city centre on a series of projects, and not least the Majestic, which is well on the way. And like Rick, I think we have our planning permission. I hope so. We just saw the lift core up there, but it's well on its way and developing it with Sir Robert McAlpine as lead principal contractor. Advanced negotiations, as you talked about, with one of what looks like Leeds' major success stories in attracting Channel 4 to the city. I think what also that shows, there is a lot going on and has been going on in the city around fintech, digital, creative. Lots of things underneath the surface, and some of that doesn't necessarily get the column inches and the work that the city in particular have been doing to promote that. But I think what Channel 4 in particular does is send that signal out on an international platform to say, actually, we've studied the city and it's a great opportunity for us to evolve our business and our enterprise and take that forward. And therefore, Leeds is a compelling offer, not just for them, for a number. And that drives a lot of other things. It's all connected in our industry, isn't it? You know, in terms of great places to work to attract talent. Good talent want fantastic homes to live in. We need to up the game in terms of the quality of the residential space in the city, which Rick's moving on with, and a number of projects that's happening. So all kind of interconnected. Again, I suppose in terms of reminds me of what Lee, in terms of working in Leeds and working with Leeds, if we like to cast our minds back to kind of the recession or the downturn, the city were very brave to crack on with some big projects like the arena, like Trinity Leeds and other providers, and Wellington Place, which is another huge success story. And we have Victoria Gate, and we're moving forward with that. So it got on and did things. And I think that spirit of working collaboratively, of trying to ensure that we can get the best out of projects, viability can be issues, but to resolve that in a positive mindset is good news. So I think we'd all say Leeds is in a great place. We'd all say that, wouldn't we? Perhaps is the cynic amongst us at that. But I think it's very incredibly well positioned. Perhaps it hasn't had the mass of space provided that some other cities have got. It's much more, a little bit more evolution, a little more incrementally, and well placed to take the benefit of the sustainable growth. And one of the other big dimensions to that is not only from our commercial sector about developing great space and getting occupiers, but is also bringing the rest of the city with us. And I know from your Eve's agenda is particularly about inclusive growth in the city, about what this can, what these investments such as Channel 4 and City can mean for all of us and not just those in the property profession.
Okay, without getting you to disclose too much about confidential discussions, when you talk to occupiers, what are their sort of hierarchy of needs, and what are the things that they, the top two or three things that they like most about Leeds? What's persuasive?
I think all the agendas is around talent. It's about people. It's about creating a platform to recruit great people to work, evolve their business and shape their business. Now, that can depend upon the city and what the city has to offer, and the universities, personnel, but it also depends upon the building. You know, unfortunately, with our project at Majestic, we like to think we're developing an iconic character building that is an attractive on a number of levels and would be a great place to work. So I think talent's important. Infrastructure is key. Accessibility in and out the city and across the north. We've moved on a long way from the Leeds-Manchester-Newcastle divide to actually collaborating across the north, and people do business across the Pennines and they want to get to and from there as quickly as they can. So location and infrastructure is key. We've seen that resurgence around the Wellington Street, the Wellington Place projects, and the quality of that environment that's evolved tremendously, really, over the last 5 years. So the quality of the place, the quality of the environment is key. But I think fundamentally it's about attracting talent.
OK, thank you. And Eve, you've got two developers there who want to go quickly. Mark talked about bravery. How do you go as quickly as Rick would like while trying to balance all the other competing priorities that you have?
Yeah, well, I think as a council we are open for business, and I think that's reflected in the comments that have already been made, in the sense of us wanting to support people who want to work with us around our ambitions for the city, and we have really significant ambitions. But by the same token, we're really clear that we want to do that in a framework of inclusive growth and sustainability. So for developers that understand what our ambitions are as a city and bring proposals forwards within that framework, then I think it's then an easier process to go through planning permission with us as a council, because there's a complementary point there. So, for example, on the South Bank, we very clearly set out a planning framework for the South Bank that makes it clear about our aspirations around delivering 20% affordable homes in that space, not just being focused on having a generic development. And it's really important to us that the development of the South Bank includes green space for sustainability, so the park will be brought forward in that space. So, you know, I think it's a two-way street. If developers have a sense of where we want to go as a city and work well with us, then that tends to ease the process through the council, I'd say. I think just reflecting on some of the comments as well, without doubt, the digital economy is growing like 50% faster than the rest of the economy. And that is what we see that we need to respond to in the city and where the opportunity lies. And Channel 4 is just really a small part of it. So we'll probably come back to the Channel 4 effect. But if you come across an organisation like Crisp Thinking in this city, who are internationally renowned on brand protection, working with some of the biggest brands in the world, Burberry, Chanel, they're in San Francisco and raising the profile of leads. And they're going to be growing from 100 employees to 500 over the next few years. That's just one story, and you add that up to Reed Smith, you add that up to Channel 4, and it's actually a very real challenge for people in this room to respond to that, and for us as a council to find the spaces and create the spaces that those businesses want to work in and grow in this city.
Okay, it's up to me to ensure things don't get too comfortable up here. So Channel 4, it's only a couple of hundred employees. Is it really going to make that much difference?
Absolutely, because Channel 4 is not... It's about so many different dimensions. I think there's the dimensions for me are, first of all, exposure to the city and the stories in the city. So Channel 4 are mostly a commissioning organisation, so they don't actually deliver TV in the same way that BBC do. So they are looking to commission a lot more of their programmes outside of London. And they're looking to the independent TV production companies in this part of the world to produce programmes and content that represent the nations and regions. So that is a phenomenal opportunity for this part of the world to get our story across. So that's the first thing, is that actually the stories from Leeds and from Yorkshire can be told more strongly by Channel 4. It's a profile for the city. And the second thing is that actually, because of Channel 4 coming, we will be making, you know, interventions that support the whole of TV and film production, not just Channel 4. And I fully anticipate that we're going to see a real kind of growth in that area. And I think we've got a particular opportunity in the area that's coming together between digital content production and TV production, which is an area where Channel 4 are going to have their digital content unit here in the city. And we've got the perfect conditions to develop a bit of a niche in that area. I was over in Manchester last week meeting with three post-production houses, all of whom want to come to Leeds. And I came away and felt, right, we need to raise our ambitions, because actually I think there's everything to go at for the city in terms of the amplification of their move here.
OK, thank you. And Matthew, it's nice to beat the likes of Birmingham and Manchester as well with Channel 4. That must be quite a psychological boost. But more than psychological, it must be, it puts the city on the map from an international investment point of view and beyond. Has there already been that ripple effect, do you think?
I think it's coming. We haven't seen as much as we'd like. I think the investment's coming in, residential investment's coming in, office investment has obviously been a hell of a lot of. I think it's been very successful. I think we'll see a lot more coming in. We can see, obviously, CEG, Vestint down on the South Bank, and that's going to be a massive focus for the whole city. And I think last time round, the development was a bit all over the shop in Leeds. Now there's some major areas of development which can really focus. And, you know, we can catch up and develop a lot more offices and residential homes, sort of not in Leeds, but also all around Leeds, with what's coming with sort of infrastructure investment.
Okay, thank you. There's a topic that we haven't discussed yet that came through pretty heavily in the questions that some of the audience put in beforehand, which I think we should go to. And I'll start with Edward Ainscow, if I can. Edward, where are you? Just in the microphone, I'll just find you.
Hi, thank you. The question is, what is the solution to the transport issues that the Leeds area has, and does the value of that solution outweigh its cost?
Okay, thank you. And there's a question from Alex Jackson as well, which I'll take at the same time. Just at the back there, if you could pass that microphone a few rows behind you, please.
What can be done to overcome the narrow transport corridors such as that which goes past the university and on through Headingley and like Kirkstall Road?
Okay, thank you. Caroline, you won't be surprised to guess that I'll start with you. It's why you're here, of course, one of the reasons why you're here. But perhaps start with that broader point. What is considered to be the solution to unlock the transport issues in the city, and will the value of this outweigh the costs?
Okay, so the overarching thing is to create a mobility system that makes it easier and viable for people to manage without a car. We're not going to, and we've known for decades, that we're not going to build more roads to accommodate traffic growth in any way that's sustainable, in any way that doesn't just induce more traffic. So we find that more and more traffic comes along, we actually create car dependence, we make it harder to manage without a car. So the solution's not easy, but broadly it's around investing in public transport, not just down corridors, but so that people can get to those corridors, people can get from towns and villages into Leeds, through the major roads, but can get to the residential areas. It's about creating safe cycling. So all the research we've done, the biggest barrier for people who might cycle, that would like to cycle but who don't, it's fear of traffic. And we can talk about just how dangerous it is, but people are scared of traffic. So safe cycling, making walking environments pleasant, making walking something that's considered a normal thing to do is incredibly valuable. And looking at what we can do with new mobility services. So there's a lot of ambition, there's a lot of hope for new mobility services. So using technology to link up different sorts of public transport, to link up ride sharing, bike hire. There's also some concerns that it could increase car dependence if we don't get it right, if we carry on just building for cars. But if we do get it right, we can potentially create an integrated mobility system that will manage the problem. I mean, there is incredible problems, particularly down Woodhouse Lane, along Kirkstall, but it'll help to manage those problems. And in terms of the costs outweighing the benefits, one of the things we've really got to think about is, well, what do we mean by the value? So Eve talked about inclusive growth and sustainability. If we're interested in that, there are so many co-benefits with a mobility system that shifts us away from car dependence. In terms of economic inclusion, people being able to take up employment, that will benefit all of us. In terms of reducing congestion, again, benefiting everyone. In terms of pollution, again, benefiting everyone. So improving health, reducing burdens on the healthcare system, but also helping people engage in society, engage in economic activity, and reducing carbon emissions. So it's not easy. We have to make decisions about subsidising some services. Not every route is going to be profitable on its own terms, but it's about looking at the bigger picture. It's very difficult to see that any other approach, the values of any other approach, could outweigh the costs, and that might be an easier way of looking at it. So I'd argue it certainly would outweigh the costs.
So are local transport issues more important, do you think, than regional transport issues or connectivity to London even?
So there's a very big question about the particularly connectivity to London, and there's an awful lot of focus about connectivity between big cities. Now, that's important, but what really matters is whether there's all of these people that are not living along these corridors, can they access the jobs? There is talent there. Can they get to Leeds City Centre? Are they stuck in, with responsibilities, perhaps for childcare, inappropriate transport to enable their families to get on, so they're having to drive families around? Can they actually get to train services, to bus services? So thinking about all of these little things links into the bigger picture and can actually make that work. So they're not in tension. Where we risk a problem is where we focus on these corridors. So if we focus on the time between Leeds and Manchester without thinking about how you get into the centre of Manchester, how you get into the centre of Leeds from places like Dewsbury or even from sort of Cookridge, then that's where we're going to have a problem. But if we look at that sort of broad picture, we're not going to do that.
OK, thank you. Hopefully that'll solve the university and Headingley issue as well. Matthew, how far up is this this up your client's list of priorities?
Infrastructure. Transport
specifically, and grading it from local, regional to national again.
I think it's linking the development sites. A lot of residential sites are we have to have large infrastructure monies coming in. There's quite a lot of sites now being dependent on HIF funding, which is Housing Infrastructure Fund, and there's a lot of sites which have got Housing Infrastructure Fund either through central government or through local authority. And the likes of, there's Elaw happening, which will open up a hell of a lot of land to the east of Leeds. Down the west eastern side of Wakefield, it opened up a hell of a lot of land to come out for housing. And this provides not just, you know, housing, needed housing in the sort of the Leeds area and the sort of the whole, and that's going to relieve transport. But as you're saying, people are still going to be reliant upon cars, aren't they?
Yes.
And that's where we don't have the links with the railways and such like, which other places don't. We don't have a tram system, which can't sort of link it through, which happens, you know, in other cities, and I think makes it work a lot better. But infrastructure is massively important, and we're seeing a lot of, to get big sites out of the green belts, or, you know, big urban sites coming forward to supply the housing that's needed. With obviously government expectations that sort of 220,000 houses, 300,000 houses a year. We're not going to get there unless we have sort of large infrastructure projects.
So unless we invest in transport, it's a brake on growth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and we're now seeing the benefits of it coming through in terms of the housing that's been delivered in the Yorkshire region. And we've got there's lots of other big projects. York Central is going to be sort of massively funded. It's only going to be viable through a large housing infrastructure fund, which should come through, fingers crossed. We don't know yet.
Okay, thank you. And Mark, in those discussions that you have with occupiers, creative or otherwise, are there concerns about transport and connectivity?
I think there's a number of issues here. I actually think in the city centre we actually have too much road space. There's far too much land dedicated to highways. And I think that creates a great opportunity to change the dynamic of the city and make it much more pedestrian and cycling friendly, which actually encourages more people to live here. And fundamentally, more people that can live here means they can access the jobs in a more sustainable way. There is a piece of work that the city have been working through, that our spaces strategy, which is about transformational projects like the closure of the city square, the spaces outside the Corn Exchange and up through the Headrow. And that's a civic, significant dimension. I also think that there's an opportunity to try to embrace as well and think creatively about transport in the future. It's often said we don't have a tram system. Manchester's got a tram system, but you can't tell me that Manchester doesn't have a congestion problem. A tram system is not the panacea. It's hugely expensive. It develops on a corridor. It may be a part of a solution, but there must be an opportunity to think innovatively about new solutions. And then from region to region is important. And if we are to break the north-south divide, then there is no longer a conversation about north v south. And you get increasingly conversations about people not just looking at the north and Leeds as a cheap place to produce or make things that they may have done 10, 20 years ago, but actually how they can tap into the talent in this region, where there are issues in London about retention of talent because of the pressures on the job market there. So people are thinking, actually, it's not just about Leeds v London, it's Leeds and London, it's Leeds and Manchester and London, and how we get from centre to centre. So that's the work that the LEP and the city are doing about inter-regional connectivity in HS2, HS3, which is a bigger debate, but on a local level, there are opportunities, I think, to think differently.
Okay, Eve, some of these things are in your control and some aren't. How about the ones that are more within your control? Some of those corridor issues, safe cycling access, closing city centre roads. Will you be delivering on some of those hopes?
Yeah, so I think hopefully people know that we're already kind of delivering and have been delivering over the last few years. So in 2016, we obviously had a major kind of consultation with the public around transport, and off the back of that, we developed our transport strategy for the city, specifically for Leeds. And you will have seen some of the interventions we've already made around that. For example, the park and ride schemes. Yeah, not 21st century infrastructure, but really, really important because they're taking 9,000 cars a day out of the city centre. So these initiatives are really important, even if they're not kind of the very latest technology. We've also invested in working with the bus companies around improving the bus service, and we won't apologise for that, because to Caroline's point, we feel it's really important that we're able to get people who don't have their own kind of vehicles to get them to jobs, and it's important for our economy, actually. We've also obviously got plans for the three new train stations in Leeds, so for Leeds Bradford Airport, Thorpe Park and White Rose. I think they're important additions in terms of then opening up areas for further employment opportunities close to people's homes. And I think we're currently, also I should say, we're currently refreshing our transport strategy, and you won't be surprised that probably through that will come more emphasis on sustainability and climate change in the current context and environment. And I think there's an interesting thing for developers to think about in terms of how are you going to help us enable a shift to electric vehicles and kind of putting electric charging points as standard into new builds of housing, for example. How are we going to start shifting and moving into that space, and how will you help us get there in terms of those meeting those carbon emission reduction targets. I think the other thing to say as well is that closing the city centre allows us to then look at things like, well, how are we going to reconfigure the Armley gyratory? And that's not just a kind of opportunity around traffic, that's an opportunity for connecting the community around that area of Leeds into the city centre that we blocked off in the 1970s when we built the road there. So, you know, it's a real opportunity for us to think about how we're connecting people, allowing them to be able to walk, cycle, use buses effectively to get to work instead of the car.
And Edward's question was about whether, or the second part of his question was about whether the value would outweigh the cost. So we have to start thinking about the costs differently, not just the cost of the project, the costs of not changing.
I think so, in the sense of, the costs. The obvious things that we mentioned earlier around active lifestyle. So for us, as a cost of the council, if we can change people's habits around walking, cycling and moving to active, that does help with health and wellbeing. It naturally then complements the burden on the NHS and social care by improving health and wellbeing, and those things are connected. Likewise, improving air quality improves the lives of some of the people in some of the poorest areas of the city, actually, that are most impacted by it, again, reducing burden for us as a council and generally. But I think everybody has got that, you know, the sense of climate change and the implications that that is going to have for us over the next 10, 20 years. So even if we take serious action now, we know that we're going to have to deal with some of the consequences of it. So we have to start thinking with that longer term view about our interactions, and actually really challenge ourselves to say, is everybody going to live in the same way in 10 years? So as we build our transport infrastructure, are people going to work and live in the ways that we've been working and living over the last 20 years? And challenge ourselves to make sure that whatever our mass transit option is, because we've said we are going to deliver one before HS2 arrives, that mass transit option is really ambitious and really leading the way in terms of what we vision for the future for us, for our city.
Okay, thank you. Rick, you spend a lot of time travelling around the country. You're jumping on a train later this evening. Do you think transport provision in Leeds is worse than some other cities? And why hasn't it changed? Manchester, Birmingham have trams. Why not Leeds?
Sure. Well, it doesn't have a tram. Everyone knows that. And a lot of other competing cities do. Why hasn't it? One of Leeds' strengths, of course, is that it's got this incredibly varied economy, and that's made it incredibly durable. And I actually think part of the reason might be that it didn't have a bomb like Manchester did, and it didn't have its industrial heartland ripped out like Birmingham did. It kind of was always carrying on, and because it didn't have that sort of crisis precipitated on it, maybe it's never had its back against the wall where it's really had to sort of shape up and deal with that. But I know that sounds a bit like a criticism, but actually Leeds has got this huge strength in its variety and its durability, and that's one of its defining features. But I've got to say, it really does need to kind of address the transport thing. I mean, I know geographically it's quite a small area, and therefore it's pretty accessible to walk around, but the number of people that come into the city is huge, isn't it? I mean, Leeds City station itself. So I can see why that is an issue. I mean, For us, maybe less of an issue because the sort of people that we house don't even drive cars most of the time, actually. And they're going to be the sort of people that are working in the city centre, or if they're nurses or teachers, they're going to be pretty close to the city centre. But I can see it's an issue. And I guess someone's just got to take a bit more of a risk, and there's got to be a collaboration across, you know, the local authorities, the LEP, the city region, business, the whole civic community, and everybody's just got to push in the same direction and just make a very loud noise in such a way that people in Westminster start to hear it.
Okay, thank you. Before I ask a ridiculous question of Caroline, I'll do a quick audience poll. Put your hand up if you think transport has the... poor transport provision has the potential to be one of the major brakes on Leeds growth in the decade ahead. So one of. Leave your hand up if you think it's the number one. So that's almost everyone who is concerned, and perhaps a majority of the audience. But I'm not going to ask about that, Caroline. EG did an event in Dubai a couple of weeks ago, and one of the speakers we had there was from Virgin Hyperloop. Mm-hmm. So building vacuum-sealed tubes that send autonomous vehicles at 600 kilometres an hour, the speed of an A380, down tubes between cities. What surprised me reading this morning was that it could potentially be on the table for the north of England and have people travelling between Manchester and Leeds in 6 or 7 minutes. Is that possible? Is it imminent? And is it sensible?
As far as I know, it's not imminent. I think it is possible. It's surprising what is possible. And we do quite a lot of exercises in thinking about what future transport might look like, and that is one of the things that does appear sometimes. I find it really quite frightening. As Eve said, we've got to think about the implications of climate change. We've got to think about doing something fairly radical now about climate change. Now, the sorts of energy that are going to be involved in a Hyperloop, in anything like this, are simply this idea that there is pollution-free technology allowing produce pollution-free energy is a little bit of a fantasy. If it's going to happen in 20 or 30 years' time, it's not happening now, and we need to do something now. I don't think it's where the focus should be. I think there's been a really sort of good comments from the other members of the panel around the tangible things we need to do around transport, and they're the sorts of things that we've been talking about for 20 years, that they are around public transport, walking and cycling, accessibility, connectivity from different areas. It's not as exciting. It's nice to talk about things like Hyperloops or maglev, whatever, but what we need for the city and for the people in the city and for in West Yorkshire is more of the, you know, slightly more mundane, literally pedestrian focus, I think.
I warned it was a ridiculous question. let's deal with sustainability, which popped up there. Someone did ask the question. If you want to put up your hand and I'll bring you in on the discussion, do. But if you want to stay anonymous, that's fine. But I saw it pop up there, and it hasn't been liked further up the agenda as much as some of the growth questions, the regeneration questions, and there it is. Sorry, it has got some likes, just not quite as many as the other ones. How's the property industry going to respond to the climate emergency proactively? So warnings that we have 11 years to prevent irreversible damage to the environment, and I think the UN estimates that real estate accounts for up to 40% of carbon emissions. Rick, can this industry change quickly enough, given that it is a major contributor?
Look, it's a really, really big issue. And, I mean, there's quite a lot of regulation now that requires you to meet a lot of standards. But even if there wasn't, the sort of investors that back us have this whole social value thing at their very core, and derivatively we have it at our very core. And it's not, and we were talking about it only yesterday, and actually I don't want us to have a social value policy, because it sounds like it was something that you siloed and you kind of added on. It's got to be something that's just so intrinsic to what we do that it just oozes out of every pore of everything that we ever do. And given that we're very long-term investors, happens to be in the residential market, we have to live with the things that we build now. I think that puts on us a different motivation than if you're a trader developer, because the residents that we house pay us a rent that's all inclusive. They don't pay a service charge or anything on top of that. So when things go wrong, it's our cost. When things are expensive to run in terms of repairs and heating and all the rest of it, it's our cost. So we're pretty motivated, we're very motivated to make sure that we are as energy as efficient, as environmentally smart as we can possibly be. So that social value thing, as I say, oozes out of every pore.
But as an industry, there's a long way to go and the clock's ticking.
Yeah, I've got to say, in the things that we're building, they're really embedded already. But I accept that, you know, we're only a small portion of the whole built environment. There's a whole 98% of stuff that's already there that's got to be converted. But it is absolutely correlated to value now. You can't get away from that. And actually, when we think about what our resident proposition is, for a lot of the millennial audience that we're attracting, this agenda is huge. I don't think they'd come to us if they thought we were profligate and irresponsible in that area.
That's interesting, Matthew. Residential may lead here. It's closer to the customer, and customer demand is changing.
I think with residential house builders, I think they've still got quite a long way to go. They are all trying. They're all trying to be what they're calling themselves five-star house builders and HBC house builders. They are all investing in it. They do have teams who are looking at how they can make houses more efficiently, how they can make them more climate evolving and such like. But it is like kicking and screaming, bringing a house builder into the real world, really. And we're nearly there. We're getting there. But it's still going to be time. City centre, you know, residential schemes, you know, as Rick was saying, it is everyone's trying to do the same thing, trying to get the schemes as efficient as possible. We'll see in time. It's not a quick fix, unfortunately.
Okay, and Eve, can you do more to accelerate change in the industry?
I'd say so.
In the demands
so, yeah.
that you, I mean, I you think, make.
I think so. Kind of a little bit of a segue, really, into innovation. So, really, because I think this applies to all sectors across the city in response to climate change. In the sense that we as a city are doing some work at the moment around analysing our innovation ecosystem. We're doing that because we're participating in the Massachusetts Institute of Technology REAP programme, which stands for Regional Entrepreneurship Accelerator Programme, which you can understand why they need an acronym. What we're doing by that is just trying to really understand what our innovation ecosystem looks like in Leeds, how we can accelerate innovation, and how we can use that to grow. I think we've got some great assets in Leeds from a property perspective around that are needed for this innovation to happen. We have the Leeds College of Building, which is the only college of its kind in the whole of the UK, who are bringing forward the skills for the new skills for modular house building and other areas. We've got work going on at the university with some of the researchers there around new forms of transport in virtuosity and other areas. I think actually we probably need to all look up and see what's going on across the city and think about how that can inform new and different ways of approaching projects and to kind of work collaboratively around some of those things. Because with the Nexus opening in the city, that's a great opportunity to get closer to some of the work that the university are doing and then help that inform thinking about what those future developments look like, what those future building materials are, what those kind of all those different types of interesting pieces. If you go and look in the future, there's a whole piece in the design centre in Leeds where they've got a three-way loom where they can. There's a whole potential there about different materials that could be used in the building, in a built environment. It's not just about design and clothing. So I think there's a need really to just lift our heads up and kind of go, what does that like real future world look like, and be on that kind of cusp of understanding how you respond in different ways to it.
And Caroline, real estate hasn't had the hard time yet that the aviation industry and other industries have. Do you think that will come?
It's
It's astonishing how awareness can really come quite rapidly. Now, I can't say what will happen with real estate, but to give an example of air quality, which is something that the scientists were telling us since at least 1994 about the harms of poor air quality, particulates and NOx. Yeah, even sort of 5 or 6 years ago, it was simply... It wasn't understood. It wasn't just not understood. It was unknown. It wasn't in people's awareness. It wasn't taken seriously, really, in policy. And it is now just shot up. When these things happen, they happen very fast. And so you could see that coming. It's certainly something that just because if it's not on the radar right now, you could see it being there in 6 months' time. The extent to which climate change awareness has come back into the agenda, because it was there, it went down, it's come back up, certainly in transport, that's also been astonishing. So, yeah, I think we can expect that awareness to expand as people understand more the implications of different areas of carbon emissions, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I promised I'd allow time for questions from the audience. There's plenty coming through here, but are there any out there? There's one just at the front here, if a microphone could come down. Wave if there's anyone else. Thank you.
I've got a question for Eve. I'm really interested in about reducing emissions from cars and how the city are looking to improve on electric points for hybrids and electric cars.
I don't know if people know, but as a local authority, we have the biggest fleet of electric vehicles in the country. So we're trying to lead by example, number one, in terms of bringing forwards that. We're also committed to the clean air zone, and that will push people to be converting their vehicles to electric, or if not converting, moving their fleet of vehicles that meet the standards to the city, those vehicles that travel in and out. I mentioned earlier we're also refreshing our transport strategy at the moment, and you might be aware that the council declared a climate emergency earlier in the year. So a large part of what we're trying to do through that is understand how our transport strategy can reduce carbon emissions. We were actually talking today around that, and you know, how far can we get with policy, and then how do we have to think about how do we then need support from the environment around us, and will there have to be carbon offsetting, for example? So if we can't achieve complete carbon neutrality around car travel, do we need to start thinking about how we offset that? You know, maybe we need to start persuading the Yorkshire National Park that they need to be replanting trees, reforesting the national park, I jest. But seriously, it's part of what we're looking at now in terms of that refresh of the local our Leeds transport strategy. So you'll see some of that coming forward over the next few months as that develops.
Okay. Might you ban high-polluting cars from the city centre? That could create a virtuous circle with some of the other things we've discussed this evening.
It's not in the plan at the moment. And the reason for that is because actually... I think the politicians felt when they brought forward the Clean Air Zone that they didn't want to unfairly... people that have older cars tend to be people that have lower incomes, so they don't want to unfairly impact them in terms of including private cars in the clean air zone initially. And so that was a decision that was taken politically, and hence the focus on taxis and buses and lorries and other vehicles coming in. But that position may change in time, but that's the current political position for the council.
Thank you. Caroline, quickly, do you think it's inevitable that that will change?
I think it will change eventually. I have some sympathy with the private cars not being included, although I do think you also need to think about the fairness of not reducing pollution, because that also, we know that disproportionately impacts people with lower incomes, and that the health impacts are just awful. But I think it needs to go hand in hand with these wider ambitions of making it possible to manage without a car. So it economic measures, low emission zones, they're a fairly sort of brutal economic, hit on people. There's no getting around that. There's no way of making them absolutely fair. So bringing in these other measures that make it easier to manage without a car, that makes it justifiable. But, yeah, do think about the unfairness of not doing it as well. Yeah.
OK, thank you. I'll come back to those top two questions, but the panel were all saying to me beforehand how much they were looking forward to talking about devolution. So let's do that quickly. Matthew, can Leeds City Region thrive without a devolution deal?
Without devolution?
Without a devolution deal. Is it necessary?
I don't think a devolution deal is necessary, no. I think the Leeds City Region is a pretty strong region. It's a very large region. And I think we're doing pretty well as we are, and I think there's a hell of a lot. There's a lot around sort of devolution. There's a lot of, you can see what's happening, obviously, with this sort of larger area of politics at the moment, and I think everybody could get in a real mess with it.
Less politics rather than more.
I think less politics and get on with business. Yeah.
Okay, Mark. Is it a necessary component of success
for probably 6 months? I mean, it just seems to have fallen off the site, perhaps it hasn't, perhaps I've missed it, but the issue kind of got on and done things. And devolution deal, I mean, there's so many different devolution deals. I think what sometimes is frustrating is that interventions needed on a regional level and some good ideas from the local community, the councils and authorities want to be delivered, but they don't have the ability to deliver. And it comes back to transport in many areas would be a big sea change. So if transport infrastructure investment is linked to devolution, then it's a good thing. But as to whether the region will not thrive if it doesn't have a devolution, I think since that must be no. As Matthew said, you know, we're just getting on and doing things. So it just seems to have fallen off the agenda, as far as I'm concerned, for the last few months. But there's another word that's in the agenda, top of the agenda at the moment. Perhaps when that word's used, we'll come back to that.
We're going light on that tonight. Shall we say light? So. I'll just ask the audience quickly, would Leeds benefit from a devolution deal? What do you think? Okay. Who's past caring? slightly more there. Caroline, transport was mentioned as a potential sector that could benefit from a devolution deal. Are the two linked?
Yes, so... For two reasons. So one is there is a tendency for the transport models and some of the way in which decisions are taken in transport. Now, these are considered to be sort of technical things and objective. They're not objective, I'd argue. They're a particular way of looking at things. What they tend to do is pull the investment to where there's already high levels of economic activity, which is why we see one of the reasons that we see more investment going into London and the South East. Now, devolution could potentially do something about that, but it depends on whether the resource comes with it. So one of the frustrations that I think the City Region has is when they're told, you can make your decisions, you can make your transport strategy, but actually you have to do what we say at Westminster. If you want that funding, you have to meet our criteria. So it depends how it's done, I think. But potentially there is that scope for making decisions that at least pull things away from the southeast a little bit. So, yeah.
OK, thank you. And Eve, we are recording tonight, so you may not want to say whether Leeds can thrive without a devolution deal. So just nod or shake your head. Do you think it's a necessary component?
Well, I'm wondering whether we can deliver devolution before we deliver Brexit. That's my retort on it.
OK. And, Rick, you go to cities and look at opportunities, cities with devolution deals and those without. Is there any difference between the two?
No, probably not, honestly. I think, cities thrive when they've got good local authorities, good governance, good collaboration between all of the component parts that make up a community. I have to say, I do feel sorry for local authorities because they have been stripped of a lot of money in this whole austerity thing. And if you go to Westminster, you don't see quite the same level of austerity. I mean, they still employ blooming hundreds of people and they have a lot of wastage. So, I'm just of that philosophy that you empower people and you know, when I go around the place, I see a lot more passion in local authorities than I do in central government, who seem to be politicking with each other, I'm afraid.
So if there's a tier of government that we could do without, it wouldn't necessarily be regional, it would be national, would it?
Yeah. You know, if you've got, you know, people join local councils for, in my experience, genuinely good altruistic reasons. And you know, if a council's well run, let them get on with it and stop starving them of a lot of funds which go elsewhere. But sorry, that's a very political, personal point of view. But I say, I'm full of, you know, I'm in the same in the company. You empower people. You know, when you empower people to do things, they care about it, they get on with it.
Eve?
I mean, what I would say is before I worked at the council, I was working in a national arms length body of the Department of Health. So I've seen it from both sides in government as a public servant. And I do think that there are some decisions that are much better made in on a place-based context, because what you see when you're in local government is the coming together of different policies from different departments, which are not organised around geography, they're organised around them. And the local authorities are a recipient of multiple policies at different government departments, which don't always focus around people. And what we've done as a council very successfully over the last 8 years or more is try and be really focused on people and communities and wrap our services around people and communities and then fix the plumbing to try and make it all work. So if you look what we've done around health and social care, we've got real strong collaboration between all of the health and social care partners in the city. And that's where local government has real strength, because we're connected to place and the people in the place and what those, and we understand what those people need. So I think it's always, in from a public servant point of view, we should always be asking ourselves, where's the best place to be making these decisions? Is it national or is it local? That's irrelevant of devolution, I think, just generally as public servants.
Okay, thank you. We're almost out of time, so let's just go through these in a very rapid fashion. And Mark, I'll start with you. How can the property industry help Leeds meet the homegrown skills required for a city to grow? What can the industry do to help grow skills here?
Well, I think, it comes back to, as well, to the sustainability point and being innovative. I mean, if we're honest about it, the property industry has not been great at leaders of the sustainable development. And we tend to look at the backwards, what has been done, what we've done in the past, and not being innovative. There's lots of innovation and ideas going around from the College of Building, City College, the Academy and the University, Technical College, and it's about sometimes joining up the dots. I think it comes back to the point of sustainability and the awareness. I think there's a movement going on where our occupiers will get asked by their workers about how efficient is my building, where are the electric charging points, where are the showers. They'll have the same in the residential world. Where are those? Where's the air source heat pumps for my boilers? And they'll put pressure on the industry to start to change. And I think the industry has got to be innovative and think differently. And in starting to, you know, Rick and you're talking about how they're thinking differently about how people use space. And so we'd like to see, certainly I'd see the local authorities kind of helping to join up the dots, really, and how we can be forward-thinking, innovative, and that provides the opportunities for the young people in the city to benefit from careers and opportunity in the construction and property industry. I don't know what the stats are off the top of my head, but they're pretty frightening about the number of people who will be out of the construction industry in that 10 years. It's an aged workforce, and we've got to think about the next 20, 30 years, and not as many people are going into our industry as there were, and that's where we've got to kind of help ourselves from a long-term perspective.
OK, I'm afraid I'll have to wrap it up there. We can talk about how we can ensure Yorkshire benefits from the growth of Leeds over drinks, and please do stay for those. Thank you for coming this evening. Thank you for your questions. Thank you to our partners tonight, Savills, Get Living, Leeds City Region, LEP, Rushbond and MEPC, and thank you especially to our panel.